Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Food Lovers Elective, where we discuss food and beyond on the dinner table. The Food Lovers Elective is a program of the Center for Regional Agriculture, Food, and Transformation, or CRAFT, at Chatham University's Falk School of Sustainability and the Environment. CRAFT's mission is to foster a transformative regional food system that is equitable, sustainable, and inclusive in Western Pennsylvania and beyond. Today, we have Ali Usane joining us to talk about groundnut or peanut production and consumption in the Gambia. Ali, thank you for joining us today. Yeah, it's great to talk to you. Let's dive right in here. We'll start with a little bit about the history and growing and eating groundnuts in the Gambia. So what can you tell us about that process?
Where Gambia finally got their independence in 1965 from Britain, and British introduced groundnut, how you guys call it, peanut, and as a product of farming. Gambia's climate is more like tropical, so it is very suitable for farming, and the Gambia being a very small country, which is divided by the ports, north, and it is a country divided by the river, which half of the hinterland of the country is fresh water. So it is, the water table in the Gambia is very low, and it's very, very suitable for agriculture. Because, you know, for agriculture, water is a big resource in order for you to succeed. So Gambia was able to, I think they introduced groundnut as a pilot project to see whether it's going to grow, given the temperature and the soil. And it became a household commodity that people use. Now, 80% of the Gambia, 80% of the Gambian economic activity is agriculture, and groundnut farming is kind of the main cash crop. And then what is cash crop? Cash crop is a kind of crop grown mostly for commercial purposes. So Gambia finds itself under that. So kind of back up the history with colonialism, with the introduction of groundnut, also not only groundnut that they used, but they also brought in cotton as well. But that cotton production in the Gambia has kind of died down over the years, but groundnut still exists. And there are many, many uses of groundnut, even though it is grown for commercial purposes, but there are so many other domestic use consumption that groundnut is used. So it is the most predominant agricultural activities in the Gambia for both commercial and consumption.
So it plays a big role in both making money for people and for their own consumption.
Oh yes. And then you get groundnut is so pervasive in the Gambia that you can find it every sector of the society. Either somebody cooking food, which will go into details, either somebody is making a garden, you know, we'll go into how it is used, either somebody is making like a local dish, you know, or either somebody is transforming it to more cash base, where that cash is used for other domestic or maybe economic activities. We can all go into those details now. We can explain how these different sectors, different Gambians use different granular activities for their economic activities.
Great. You mentioned a little bit about the water and how the country is split by the river. Is there a specific area of the country that you're going to find ground nut production in, or are you going to find it all over the country?
Everywhere. Any plot piece of land that any person has is suitable for groundnut agriculture. And it's now within the cities, because of the population, the growth of the population, a lot of commercial centers within the city have been transformed into housing activities. But even within those, like, you know, Gambia, we live in compounds. Even those compounds, within those compounds that are fenced, people grow groundnut over there during the season. And there are different varieties of groundnut also that people grow. Mm. Yeah. There's the early groundnut, the variety. The first type is the early groundnut, which is, it takes quicker, you know, to ripe, and then it's mainly used for domestic consumption. There's more like large-scale agricultural groundnut, which takes about 6 months longer to ripe. That's mainly grown in the hinterland, but both can be grown in the different parts, because it can also be exported to the capital within the cities and sold either for domestic consumption or for more like exports. So.
Also, hi, Aliyu. My name is Eve. I don't think I introduced myself earlier. So I'm going to dive into our next question. Can you tell us about a few dishes that are made using groundnuts, or describe a few?
That's the interesting thing. That's the peanut sauce. We probably had it in Juniata, I think.
Oh, yeah. We love Domina.
That's like the main dish. A lot of students in Juniata go to the Gambia love. And even Gambia is like one of the main primary dishes that is grown in the Gambia is Domina. And how it is made, Domina is like they turn the peanut cells into butter. You know, it's just like how you have peanut butter. And that is mixed with water and boil and add it with all other vegetables, with all stuff, you know, and it's mixed with rice. It's a very yellowish dish, and it's cooked in a different fashion. And the taste is amazing. A lot of students that I've been over the years, Juniata, have told me that groundnut production is one of so Domoda is one of their main, you know, favorite dish in the Gambia. That's the main aspect. But groundnut also can be also prepared in sort of like we have our porridge that we use. Porridge is, you mix it, you pound like fresh groundnut with rice, which is mixed with water, and they call it churai. Churai is also a very delicious kind of soup that Gambians, it's very, very popular in Gambian homes. You probably, guys, if I don't know if you're married, your group had to do the homestay, but some of the students that, you know, over the years, we've been doing homestay, and churai is one of those food that we do have for breakfast. Mm. It tastes like what would I compare it to American? It's almost like I'm trying to remember what it is, kind of similar to in terms of American food.
The but texture sounds kind of like maybe grits, or oatmeal.
Exactly, like it's very hard to differentiate churai with oatmeal, because they are so similar. The taste is almost like, sometimes I kind of like figure out maybe how, I don't know the mixture of the oatmeal, but the taste is almost the same. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, and even they kind of look the same. Somebody prepared an oatmeal and a peanut, and sometimes it may be very difficult to differentiate what kind of dish are those, but they're, that's oatmeal is the right this type. The other way in which groundnut is consumed in the Gambia locally is they call it gato. It's like they take the groundnut and roast it. And when they roast it, the cells, and then they split up the cells, and then you use the groundnut seeds and mix it with sugar that melts. And you guys probably will see it sold in the street in the Gambia. A lot of people like it, and they call it gato. It's kind of a little bit hardened, but sweet. And with a mixture of groundnut, it gives a very flavorless taste to when you eat it. It's kind of sweet and very, 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 very delicious. And another thing, which is always my my favorite, is that groundnut, like fresh groundnut, which is roasted with salt. They sell it in the street in the Gambia. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my favorite. And it's like the fresh, not the dry one. It's roasted with salt. And a couple of times I've been to some international store where I bought groundnut fresh one, and I buy them and I put salt and let it boil. And it's always very good to eat. And those are also sell there. And the other way in which it's used is that, like, you can also roast the groundnut itself and first they soak it with salt in the water and let it dry. And then they roast it. And when they dry, they roast it, and it's also give you that I think Five Guys at Burger, if you guys been there, Five Guys, they have that kind of groundnut sell right in front of their centers when you enter in, and they always offer you those. So it's roasted peanut butter, it has salt mixed with it, and that's also sold in the Gambia.
I know that at Five Guys and at other restaurants in the United States, those are sold still in their shells. Yes. Is that how they're sold in the Gambia too?
Yeah, they either be sold in their shells, or you can split it and then sell them in and then display the tip of the coverage and then make it look a little nicer, and then they put it in like a little like nylon bags. Mm-hmm. So that you know, and then each of them has a cost, and you can see women carrying them with the plates. Mm-hmm. And moving around and then handing them over to keep. That's also very common.
So those versions are like the roasted, the salted, the sugar. Those are kind of snacks that you might find on the street at vendors and things.
And then also used for like household consumption. Mm-hmm. And the order, groundnut has a multiple factors of usage. Is that aside from the groundnut, the hay, you know, the groundnut hay, I use mainly for gardening, vegetable gardening. Because, you know, the soil, usually soil dries faster when women water their garden. So they spread the groundnut hay as a which serves as a multiple factor, either to reduce the radiation of the sun, to make sure that it keeps their water beds kind of wet, that groundnut hay also later on decompose into manure and make it more like fertilizer, local fertilizer for those vegetable plants that women are growing. And also, we grow a lot of ruminant animals like goats, cow, you know, it's called horses. So horses are mainly they eat groundnut hay as food. So it's like the cycle. You use the animals to grow the crops, and then those crops, and you turn groundnut will turn into hay, and the hay is eaten by animals, and then later on sometimes use it for manure and then grow back the crops. So it's a whole around the cycle of, it's like a cycle of when you prepare to use it, you're ground.
You're really using every part of the plant when you're growing groundnuts. So for people listening who might not know how groundnuts are grown, what we actually eat, the peanut, as we would call it, grows underground. And then this groundnut hay that you're describing, is that the green that grows above the ground?
Yes. Yes. The groundnut cells, these ones are, they're kind of deep-rooted crops. And they use the agricultural term. So they grow under the soil. And then, but the leaves grows up. And then the leaves is what is harvested. Both the leaves and then the groundnut are harvested. And then the leaves are separated. And then the groundnut is used for more like consumption and even for commercial activities. And we will talk more about commercial activities. If you want me, I can dilate more into the commercial aspect of it, away from the domestic consumption. So the commercial aspect of it will be, this is more in the hinterland where there are many abundant lands where, so Gambian agriculture is different from the United States, which is much more commercialized, right? Our agriculture is mainly grown by local families and not like big companies coming in to grow. Groundnut, this is individual families, and when they grow is usually sold to the government or maybe other private sectors that go in to buy peanuts, like in large amounts. So as if individual families, they grow this to be able to feed their families, they can turn those into cash crop and then use proceeds from the cash crop to maintain their family. Either they buy rice or they send their kids to school or use it for any other economic needs of their family. So, but the difference in which in agriculture is implemented in the Gambia is still much more traditional. There's no large-scale mechanized agricultural activities like it is in the United States. Because what we do use, to grow groundnut with still local tools, you know, using horse and donkey, you know, with like a plow and traditional tools. So the scale of agriculture is, the potential is there to expand, but the scale is still much more limited given the lack of mechanization in the sector. And that's the main challenge. So people grow and recently, and then the price of groundnut is also getting to the international market. So the government comes and buy it from the farmers, but also they will sell it to the international market. And usually in the Gambia also, another thing that I forgot to mention is that large-scale commercial activity, groundnut is transformed into oil, groundnut oil. So in the Gambia, you know, when you're crossing, you've been to Banjul, right?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So and in Denton Bridge, when you're crossing the Denton Bridge, there's a large peanut factory that is there where in those days when the height of the season, there are boats that goes in the hinterland and transport the groundnut all the way to Denton Bridge. And Denton Bridge, they're offloaded into a factory, and that factory would process those groundnut and transform it into groundnut oil, which is either exported to European or American international market for commercial activities. But that recently, the machine, I don't know if it's still working, different government priorities, so during the groundnut season, to pick up the groundnut season, always when you pass through, you can see a lot of activities going there, but that also dies down as the groundnut season ends, which is mostly around October, November, and that time.
So you mentioned the processing facility. that is government owned?
It is government owned. I don't know if it's still transferred to the private sector, but I think it's still government owned. Okay. They call GPMB Gambia Processing Ground, Gambia Ground Processing Board or something like that. That's what it's called.
So if you're growing ground nuts in the Gambia, you are either going to use them for your own consumption or to sell them to your neighbors, or you're going to sell them to the government.
To the government, yeah. Okay. So it's those are the main type of ground that's used, yeah. Domestic and commercial. And the now the challenges, that wouldn't go without the challenges right now, because the Gambia, since this is an agricultural session, it's important to introduce the idea of aflatoxin. They're saying our Gambian peanut has been facing some obstacles in terms of the soil pH in the Gambia. And they say the challenge is that Gambian soil is kind of infected with some kind of aflatoxin. I don't know what kind of chemical combinations which is affected in terms of the quality of the ground, especially in the international market. And I think a colleague of mine, Andy Blanc, who recently came to the Gambia, in his studies says that, I mean, that could be alleviated by using, I think, the oyster cells from the sea, because that would reduce the salination of the soil that is causing this aflatoxin cycle. But that was his study. He's conducting research on that. And it was a very interesting thing for me, because I didn't know that cells, even though there are many in the Gambia, how many more farmers know about this project? So Andy's project, he's trying to raise awareness and raise some funds to be able to help farmers aware of that, hey, you could use, oyster cells to spread it into farmland to improve the quality of your ground yield at the end of the year. And I was fascinated by that, because I didn't know that that would have been a possibility or something that is done. It's like we have a problem, but the solution is in the Gambia, and farmers are not educated about it.
Mm-hmm. So it comes down to spreading that information and making sure that farmers know that there is a solution and that there's something that can be done to keep them growing.
So that was what he shared with me, and this project that he's working on in terms of farmer sensitization to increase the yield of their product using the oyster cells. Which is a very easy mechanic. You just buy it. Go to oyster cells are in abundance in Gambia because they're harvested and in piles around the jetty, which where you cross into Bantu. So when you go, you harvest. You can just take hire a truck and then just go and then spread it in your farmland. And that information was very striking.
I think that goes back to what you were saying too about the cycle of groundnut production. Is that a lot of it can be repurposed to keep growing and to keep using it for other parts of the process.
You talked a little bit earlier, or you mentioned a certain variety of groundnut that is grown in the Gambia. I'm just wondering if there are other varieties that are also grown, like species of groundnut that are?
I think from now is what I've seen is the main, because there are different varieties of groundnut. I've seen a lot of varieties being here, but Gambia is kind of two main varieties that I've seen. The one I told you, the early groundnut, and then the other one that takes a little bit longer to ripe. So the early groundnut, like during the season, that comes in earlier before the actual groundnut season, but mainly those are used for consumption. They don't use those for exports, because they rot faster. I think within, months, 3 or 4 months, they rot faster. And then those ones are mainly, you can find those in a lot of Gambian households, like domestic, because they rot faster and people need them. And then they're easily, taken and it sold in the market, and people will buy those for consumption. But the other one, it takes a little bit longer to ripe, and then those are mostly also grown for commercial purpose. That doesn't mean they are limited to commercial purpose. They can also be used for domestic consumption. It depends on what the person wants. Or you want a groundnut. They taste basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on what you want to use it for.
You mentioned groundnut season a few times, and that it finishes or ends in October. When is groundnut season in the Gambia? Like what months?
So right now, around January, February. So the groundnut, this season, Gambia, like I said, even though we have abundant water, the internet, we do not have a mechanized agricultural sector that will be able to draw water from the large pools of the River Gambia into the hinterland to water the ground. So we don't have that, you know. So what always happens is that we depend entirely on rainy season, you know. So rainy season, which starts sometimes late May, sometimes late June, is kind of moving. It's not. And June, July, August, September, they start ripening up. September, December, you know, they start harvesting groundnut. And then January, February, that is like the trade season, when groundnut are harvested, packed, and transported for more commercial activity. So within January, February, around that time, it's like a most busy season for farmers. You know? And then after that, by March, April, they start clearing the fields towards May to prepare the fields for the next groundnut season, you know, for planting season, in other words, ahead of the rain that may be coming around late May, June, July. So that's kind of the cycle. But imagine if we had a mechanized structure where you can grow the groundnut all year round. Because there's abundant water, there's abundant sunlight, there's not like winter, you know, different weather structures like we have here that will make it hard to grow those crops. They can be grown around the year, but it's just the people don't have much mechanized agricultural knowledge to be able to use these potentials to grow in more large-scale capital farm.
Well, I'm thinking about water and irrigation. A lot of those systems can be pretty pricey to put in an irrigation system. So I can imagine that would be a little bit of a challenge for people to invest in too.
It is. And there's a lot of folks working with farmers trying to, you know, see, even not even groundnut, it's even rice, which is the main staple crop in the Gambia. It's exported. When we have a river, a whole half of the country is fresh water that could be tapped and grown into all year round. But this is a non-existent. So with peanut, it's just the same. You know, it's just either there's we got like a private sector investment that will boost that capacity and create it all year round. But most agricultural activities in the Gambia, like I said, is all kind of limited to individual families who are, like I said, 70% of the people are farmers. And then mostly it's consumption or kind of mini scale / commercial, you know, just to sell whatever the proceeds they have to the government, which by the way, puts a groundnut takes a groundnut price every year at a certain level, you know. So where it's a question of take it or leave it. So you grow, and then this is what the government is selling their groundnut, buying their groundnut from the farmers. And it's not a question that I can go elsewhere and sell it somewhere, because the government is the main provider, the main business you know, sole business authorizing agent for this purpose, you know. And maybe you could, other folks may have options that live around the border, for instance, to cross to Senegal, if Senegal is providing them more,
like a price per pound or
right.
Higher. Yeah.
They sell it kilos or pounds. Kilos,
yeah.
So if Senegalese government is selling it at a much higher rate in terms of pound, they might cross the border and go to Senegal and sell it. So that's the only competitive advantage that folks have if you live around the border. Other than that, you have to sell it to the government. Or if you can find other private individuals that might want to buy it, but they normally would buy it in large scale. You know.
So if you have a lot, you really have to sell it to the government because you're not going to be able to sell it to anyone else.
And then it's weight, and then price, and then that price is given. Yeah.
So you've explained a little bit about the country as a whole and groundnut production, but we're kind of curious about your own personal connection to groundnut production and consumption. Like, what connects you, other than being from the Gambia? Like, what do you, how do you connect with that?
Similar story that is pervasive in the Gambian society. My parents were farmers. We grew up, you know, farming, you know, all kind of, other agricultural crops that we farm. So I grew up farming groundnut, and, you know, even at a young age, which at that time, when you compare that time, when you compare the lives, when I kind of think through my lifestyle with that of America, they will be, oh, that is child's labor. No, it wasn't child's labor. Me, it was like, You're learning how, you know, you're learning the trade from you're learning the agricultural skills. It's like transfer of agricultural skills as a minor growing up, because you expect to inherit this trade naturally from your parents. So, I mean, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a family that prioritized education, but also this, my father used to say, if your education fails, you can always come back to the farm. That will never fail you, because we're teaching you with these skills so that you know. So I grew up, you know, in those, when you're younger, you don't do much, but you gotta be taking food to the farm, to your family, because they've been farming in, over there. And you kind of learn, they teach you, this is how you do this. This is the difference between grass and peanut. So if you're going to remove, if you're hosing through the groundnut, you have to separate the weed from the groundnut. So they teach you that young, so you kind of know which one is weed that you go for and remove the weed. And so that's how I learned and kind of grown up farming and to the production stage. What role do I have as a youngster? And now, pretty much, even though I claim to get a PhD, I still have those skills. If I go to the Gambia, I go to my village in Jaro, and we farm. And my family live in the city, but during the rainy season, I still operate a farm over there in my village, and where I still, you know, even though I consider my siblings lazy now, they don't want to, they kind of betray the family the heritage by not even wanting to go to the village to farm. I pay people to go and clear my, you know, farm and plants, and then, you know, if it's time for weeding, I send money, they go over there and weed off the stuff. And if it's time for harvesting, I pay people, or maybe the community comes together, help each other in terms of harvesting. And mainly, I don't use it for grass crop. I end up leaving it in the village for my family that's still there. They are like domestic consumption. So farming is still really relevant in my life. And growing up, it's just a skill that I can never forget. I just enjoyed. And it's also given me an offset, like, with a, like, more academically intense stuff, with free of my mind to go and be, you know, hands in the sand and physical stuff. It's kind of play on my mind. It's like a mini sports for me, mm-hmm. and a kind of a therapy, which I love doing when I'm, and I probably might be trying to go there this season, during August this time around, just to farm and just enjoy that life.
So you've been studying in the United States for a number of years, but through all that time, you've still been managing the farm.
Still have students that are still in the village, and then their life is dependent on this. So even though I support them financially, but I also create an incentive to keep that cycle going. You know, they say before you give somebody fish, you need to teach them how to fish. You know, so that culture is very much ingrained in our farm. And it's now basically optional because now they have an economic line that I can provide. But without me, in those days, it's whatever. You either farm or you don't have nothing to eat, you know. So now it's more less serious than it used to be. Because in those days, it was a lifestyle. Like, you either farm or you have nothing to eat. That's what your parents have to give. Now they have an option. Some still want to go. Others, I have to coax them to go. And others were still willing participant in it, and then they were very willing to still continue farming. Yeah.
I'm interested in taking it back to dishes made with groundnuts for a minute. So dishes like the domada and the porridge that you mentioned, are those eaten? I mean, the way you describe them, it sounds like they're eaten and made in the home. Do you also find those in, like, restaurants or, like, public eating spaces as well?
The churai. The churai is kind of a porridge.
Okay.
Yeah, home.
Okay.
But the domada is always pervasive everywhere. We have so many local restaurants. And a lot of people, interestingly, like to go into those when they come to the Gambia. Because, like, if they're trying, like, if you go into the Gambia, there are so many varieties of food at hotels. And what I found very interesting and strange is that when you go into Gambian hotels, they will offer all these international dishes and this is why my program with Juniata is much more interesting and attracts a lot more participation, is that we don't do what the normal tourists do. We try to blend in with the culture and try to learn the culture through the food that they provide, interact with the people, learn. So we don't even go to, like, hotel restaurants. We go to local Gambian restaurant where Gambians go, you know. So if there are so many restaurants that are there in the Gambia that made local dishes, that chicken, yasa, domada, benachin, and all those stuff that I made. So a lot of those restaurants it provides you into a taste into Gambian homes. And I found that the irony, I said, why would you have a hotel leaving the Gambia and offer your guests international dishes when they're in the Gambia, when you could have offered Gambian made dishes? And those are healthy. They're very delicious, and people love them. But it's like, they want to provide, okay, you want a guest to feel like home, from home, but that also defeats the purpose of even traveling. That person is done with, if that person wants that hamburger, you better stay in the U.S. You got a lot of burgers around, you know, you can just, you know, slide into McDonald's and get that stuff over there, you know. But if I keep telling these guys, some friends that I know who were pretty in the hotels, they were like, oh no, we want to provide them with, so we can find, like, we're international. I say, no, it doesn't matter. Give them Gambian food. That's what they want. That's why they came over. They came over, not the food you're serving, they can eat it over there, where they're from. Give them to answer your question, is there a local Gambian restaurant, which I always take my junior high students to. And then they find love in it. Aside of that, they go to the Gambian homes, to the homestay, where they can even learn how these dishes are prepared. Hotel, kind of local restaurants, they're more commercial, they're busy, they don't have Gambian things. But you can learn more when you do homestay and how to prepare this. And that's why when I go to Juniata, anytime when we have this fundraising event, we have this domadan that is served, that's made by students who learn those from the Gambia. They learn the recipes. So.
And just for the listeners of the podcast, too, you mentioned Juniata a couple times. So just to give a little background, Juniata College is in central Pennsylvania. That's how Aliyu and I met, is through a program there where students get to visit the Gambia for a couple weeks and travel and learn about the country. And it's an incredible program. And you're right. The food is a huge part of it, is getting to try all of the local dishes and actually be a part of the process. So. When you're talking about domada, do you see a difference in the way that it's cooked between homes, or is there kind of one standard way that people make it?
Varieties of it is as modernity, or maybe I would say modernity, and more Gambian become more aware with all different the ingredients. And now, in fact, the WhatsApp, with the WhatsApp, they can. This WhatsApp, which is a local, a kind of a Facebook, you know, technology where they can share. Oh, I cook this groundnut, but I added this flavor to it, and now this is what the outcome came in, and the taste is amazing. So they, people kind of copy this, you know, with the age of the internet, there's a lot more sharing. In those days, it used to be local, like this is how I used to do it. You share it with your neighbor. Now you can share it into the world, and then the world knows what kind of ingredients you are able, and everybody's willing to try. So you can find those flavors creeping into the market. Oh, I never tried that. I never had that kind of peanut domada, but it's actually cool. And that is the, you know, but mainly there's also a standard. Also, I think when basically different ethnic dynamics that comes into play, because there are different ethnic groups that are in the Gambia. So, for instance, some, you know, most Gambians, I think 90% are Muslim. So you could find groundnut domada being made with chicken. You can make domada with chicken, or you can make domada with beef or goat, right? But hardly, maybe if you go to like a Christian home, because they eat pork, Gambians don't eat pork. So you may find domada being cooked with with pork, which is not going to be common in terms of, because it has a religious dynamics, you know, being Muslims, they don't eat pork. And I think also maybe it might also come into like an ethnic flavor into it, like some ethnic group might prefer it cooked some way as opposed to certain way. So that's also depends, you know. You can find different ethnic flavors that they think they like more into it. Yeah. But this is most like nuances. Like it could come down to individual ethnic or even religious dynamics. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on where you are, who you're eating with. But it's a very small country, so we can share most basic understanding.
I'm also interested in, like, what's your favorite ground nut dish or your favorite way to enjoy ground nut?
Domada is, like, my... I actually had it in my... I mean, I've been eating it for a minute, so I just eat it and take a break and go back to it. Mm-hmm. But I don't... anytime I cook it, it's not, like, the best that I always, you know, it's not like a, because I don't find all the ingredients that I needed, the ones that I will have gotten from the Gambia here. So it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of the U.S. Gambian domada, but still lacks the main ingredient, some of the main ingredients that I would have loved to have here at my disposal. So, but I still think.
What are some of the ingredients that you have trouble finding in the U.S.?
You know, you have this they call it jahato. It's a vegetable which is mixed. It's kind of a vegetable is prepared, and also sometimes I found okra, but sometimes the okra is either frozen or like fresh okra that like is hard to find inside a time. And what else do I find? It's the thing they call it lychee. I don't know the English name for it, but that's also made in the Gambia. It's very common in the Gambia that you can find in the local market and people are buying that. But the rest of the other materials, you can find them everywhere. You can find them everywhere in the U.S. You just have to tailor it more into what exactly you need it. And but they mainly found. So it has a U.S. version too.
Mm-hmm.
And the taste always will remind you that this is, once I go to the Gambia, I had domoda in the Gambia, it reminds me, I'm cold. Yeah. that stuff is kind of, you know, when I go to Juniata, when you taste the Juniata domoda, you know the difference. That's U.S. domoda. The Gambian domoda will be different.
You can try to make it exactly the same, but it's just, there's going to be something different about having it at your home in the Gambia.
It's just some of the ingredients I mean, the Midwest, so there's no diversity here. In New York, you might have all the ingredients there. So it also depends where you prepare, because there's a whole lot of international producers. So there's a lot of concentration of West Africans, especially Gambians and Senegalese in New York. So somebody told me when you're there, you can get your Benachin, you can get your domoda, you can get Yasa, all those made because they are Gambian local, Gambian Senegalese restaurants that cater for those needs because there's a demand there. There's big people there. So just to count that out, like in the U.S., it depends on where you are too.
Yeah, the Midwest is definitely a little different than other parts of the U.S. This country is just so big.
You know, being seen now coming from the Gambia and being here, that tells you how much you have learned. You know, it'll be easier if you go from the U.S. to the Gambia, everything looks smaller. But when you come from Gambia and then being here, it's like you just say a needle in a haystack.
You've covered a lot of our questions, even in just your descriptions of growing and eating groundnuts in the Gambia. Do you have any other final thoughts or anything that you'd like to share to wrap up here?
Just other than to say groundnut is a product that is just it's like a product that is used in a cycle, you know, whether it is the cells, they're useful, whether it is the hay, it is useful, it has different purposes in the Gambia. So it is a product that is, it is the magic, how do you call it, plant in the Gambia. And it is phenomenal. It provides food. Domestic food consumption. It is also provided. It also can be used as a cash crop, like in terms of boosting economic families for individuals, or when they sell those groundnuts and use it for food, for use other proceeds for maybe to educate their kids. So it has a whole lot of dynamics and different varieties in which it is used. Economic activities or for consumption, consumption in the Gambia. It is also a product that also a crop that unites us as it provides an avenue for you know to have food and share with the people that you care about. Especially when you have your domoda, you can have your friends over, make it a big deal and eat and fellowship. So it is a very, very important product, and that is used for many, many different things. Yeah.
Well, thank you again for joining us on this episode of the Food Lovers Elective. Yeah, we just want to say we appreciate your time. And also would like to thank our listeners, remind everyone that this episode and others in the Food Lovers Elective can be found on Spotify. You can give Chatham Craft Instagram a follow. The handle is at Craft Chatham if you want to stay updated on when episodes are released. And yeah, thanks again, everyone, and Aliyu.
You can find the recipe online too. If you want to try it, you can find the recipe online. It's easy, and just type Domo Daddy West African food, what a peanut sauce. There's a whole bunch of instructions that may pop up and that you can use to make your own dish and see how it tastes,
It's interesting. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.